He seldom exploded in open fury, but man, could he brood. Hi guys, welcome to the Fangover podcast, where we romance all things that go bump in the night. I'm Suzanne from Under the Covers Book Blog, and I am joined by...
Francesca from Under the Covers Book Blog.
So Stephanie couldn't make it today. She had a puppy emergency. So it will just be Francesca and I talking through to you. We are talking about Mind to Possess, which is book four in the Side Changeling series. And we are back with Dark River and the Big Cats. So in Mind to Possess, it's the turn of Clay, who is one of Lucas's sentinels, to find his HEA. However, I have already threatened people with giving them some facts. So I have some big cat facts, which, oh my God, is so much harder to say than I expected, to give you. Basically because I wanted to. There was a point in this book which made me go, do cats do that? Well, do leopards do that? And then it took me down into a rabbit hole. And I thought I would share that rabbit hole with everybody. So... let's start. Francesca, are you ready to learn?
I am ready. let's go to school. Okay.
Okay. So Lucas, who is the alpha of the Dark River pack, is a panther. He is a black panther. But panther is actually a family of cats that can roar. So that includes tigers, lions, jaguars, and leopards. So when you hear panther, it is actually a more general term for big cats that can roar. However, panther is also used a lot to talk about big cats in their melanistic forms, which means basically big cats that have solid coloured fur. So that means black leopards, black jaguars, pumas, which are also known as mountain lions and cougars. So when you hear the term panther, it can mean like loads of different things. But in the case of Lucas, he is called a panther because he is a black leopard. So then let's move on to Vaughn, who is also another character that we have already got. I hope you're taking notes, Francesca.
Absolutely. There will be a quiz, I'm sure.
There will be a quiz at the end. And if you don't pass, you're kicked out of the podcast. And so then we have Vaughn, who was the hero of Visions of Heat. And he is a jaguar and not a leopard. So jaguars are the third biggest cat in the world after lions and tigers, but their number one thing is their bite. So they have the most powerful bite in the big cat world. So most big cats will get their prey by biting their necks or the throat of their prey, but what jaguars will do will literally bite their head off. They'll bite like the back of the skull with their powerful like jaws and just crush it and kill it that way, rather than going for like the softer throat. So that's jaguars. So now we're moving on to leopards. So Clay is a leopard, and what got me down this rabbit hole is that at one point in this book it mentions that Clay starts to purr, and I was like, I'm pretty sure the big cats can't purr. And I'll get to that, but first of all, some background information about leopards. So leopards are the smallest of the panther group, so they're smaller than tigers, lions, and jaguars. But they have powerful muscles that allow them to climb trees and carry heavy loads, and they're known as being kind of sneaky and kind of sly. So that's leopards. So the purring thing. The common thinking is that they can't purr. So there's like this theory that cats can either roar or they can purr, but they can't do both. So your normal house cat can purr, but it can't roar. But a lion can't purr, but he can roar.
Okay.
They don't have the structure in their throat to be able to do it. Well, they do have the structure in their throat to be able to do it, but it's petrified in a way that means they shouldn't be able to do it. I did go down a rabbit hole looking at a leopard's larynx and stuff, but I won't go into it. But basically their throat is constructed in a way that basically they shouldn't be able to do it. But there has been dispute in recent years that leopards can make like a purring like sound, but it's more of a rolling growl rather than a purr in the same way that a house cat can purr. Which seems like it's really stupid, like, so like, doesn't matter if it's a growl or a purr, but the thinking is that the reasons that leopards would purr would be different to the reason why a tabby cat can purr, because they've obviously evolved in different ways. So it might sound the same, but it might have evolved for different purposes. From what I can gather from my dive into the rabbit hole about big cats. So basically, and I also watched a video of like a leopard like purring, and it was fucking terrifying. And the leopard started making the, because it would make like the purring sound, and like for a few seconds, and then there'd be this like weird snarl at the end of it, and it's like, I'm getting away from that.
It's not as sexy then.
I mean, it was kind of cute when it was at the, like, the what you think is, like, the purring bit. But then, like, it ends with, like, a snarl and, like, a growl. And then it'll get start, like, the purring, like, sound again. So look that up. I recommend looking it up. Because it was a really cute leopard as well. Terrifying, but cute. So that is school. And now I have 5 questions for you. So that was my rabbit hole about leopard and jaguars and what a panther is. So I hope you have all learned.
Thank you for that.
Fangover. Yeah, the Fangover is an educational podcast. So yeah, those were my cat facts. I hope you enjoyed them.
Absolutely.
And don't worry, when we get to the wolves, there'll be wolf facts
too.
On our next wolf book. But no, so when we got to the scene where it's saying, oh my gosh, Clay's purring, and I'm like, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure I read somewhere that leopards can't purr and like lions and stuff can't purr. So I then started Googling.
I love the curiosity though.
Yeah. So it's like, do you remember the book we read with the palace cats?
Yes.
I can't remember what book it was now. And then I went down.
Suzanne Wright. Yeah.
Yeah. And massive. And then I was just sending pictures to people of palace cats just constantly.
I mean, they are adorable.
Yeah. But I would send them
and ferocious.
Like, yeah. Oh, they're so cute. I would send them as like responses. Like, if I was happy, a happy palace cat picture. If I was confused, a confused palace cat picture, because they're really expressive as well, palace cats, with their faces. I also Google palace cats as well, guys. They're cute.
Yep, definitely. They are adorable.
It's clearly anything.
I mean, I always welcome one of your palace cats text messages, so keep them coming.
Yeah. I'll post some pictures of palace cats onto the Instagram stories. I'm pretty sure I did it last time, but it bears repeating. Mm-hmm. It bears repeating. I also
absolutely. Although there are, for reference, there are no palace cats in this series.
No. There's no palace cats in this series. But it's all leopards, jaguars. There's a lynx in one of the novellas, I think, and wolves. Each time we encounter a new creature, I'll do some facts, whether you love.
Well, I mean, there are also rats and sea creatures. And you know, actually, what I found really interesting in this particular book is they talk about snake shifters.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I was like, oh, how did I miss that? And I don't think that I would want to see that, especially how Clay was referring to them. They didn't sound like, you know, the most welcoming species.
Because I don't think they're ever really mentioned again. I can't remember any
snake shifter characters
actually coming up. I personally would love a snake shifter.
Of course you would.
Because it reminds me of some of the alien books that I've read with snake aliens.
I thought the exact same thing would be your response. Yes, I know.
But now I've forgotten they're kind of otherworldly and make people uncomfortable, and I'm down with that.
It would be interesting to see how Nalini Singh does them, because it would be completely different than your alien books, I'm sure.
We'll see. But yeah, I'm sure it would be interesting to see how Nalini would handle a character like that.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine she'll do it great.
Then again, the one character that I am still holding out hope that we get even in novella is the rat shifter, the rat alpha.
Yes. Because I thought that it mentions somewhere along the lines that he gets married.
I think he gets, yes. But I mean, I would like to see a little novella that shows you
him getting married.
Yeah, exactly.
Because is he gay as well? I thought that he was gay.
That I don't remember.
But then again, sorry, another.
I mean, but you know, he is the alpha of the rat shifters and they live underground. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we need to see that.
I need to see that, obviously.
Yeah. I might think he was, thought he was gay because in the Kate Daniels series by Elena Andrews, the cat alpha is gay, like, and there's like two alpha male rats, and I maybe have got those confused. Also, Kate Daniels series is amazing.
I was going to say, probably we're missing some Elona Andrews plugs for this episode. So now that that part of the script is over.
Well, it's been a while since I've plugged it in a Psy Changeling. I realised I spoke about it in the LH Cosway episode. But it was relevant. It was relevant.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, they're rat alpha. Yeah, I guess so.
I did have a memory of thinking that his partner was a man and that he was gay, but nothing's ever really mentioned. The Rat Alpha appears like in almost like the beginning part of this series, but then it's kind of forgotten about and you never really hear from them again.
Yeah. And he was helpful and... I think there's potential there to see where the story went, especially with an interesting dynamic of how they live. And
yeah, because there was only actually four rat shifters.
Shifts into a rat.
all the rest are human, aren't they? So the underground pack is actually mostly human, like like all the disenfranchised and homeless people, and the four rat shifters that are there, like, take care of them, and they form their own,
which I think is really interesting. It's really interesting dynamic, so I would love for her to explore that, or to see us or show us, you know,
to get them involved in the story. I think I mean, I don't want to give away too much, but so at the moment the books are really set in San Francisco. The latter half of the books are set in other places. And obviously the rats are useful because they're a spy network for San Francisco. Right. They wouldn't perhaps be as useful over in Russia where some of the other books are set. So, but still.
Unless I wonder if the pack mentality for rat shifters is the same wherever you put them. So maybe it wouldn't be the same alpha. But maybe... there are also rat shifters in Russia with an underground network, and maybe they could be helpful.
Yeah. I mean,
like if maybe that's like a trait of the rat shifters.
Yeah, maybe.
Could be.
Because we also never get any books about non-predatory changelings.
I don't want to give it away. But in the Trinity series,
well, when we get to that series, I'll give you some facts which may change your mind about the predatory nature of that particular animal.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. Yeah. Interesting. But they're so cute.
You don't want to be a baby whale, put it that way.
So, oh god.
Let me blow your mind.
All the animal facts.
Yeah, you'll get them here. This is actually a wildlife show disguised as a book podcast.
Oh, that's funny.
But no, we haven't had any non-predatory. And I'm like, what non-predatory animals would I like to see as a... And I do you know what? I actually can't think of any. I mean, they talk about swans and I'm just like, I don't really care about them.
No.
I
mean, I personally like elephants, but I don't know that that would be a shifter animal that I would like to see.
I think it would be cool.
Yeah.
Whatever ones.
They would need a lot of space, though. Like, they can't, I don't know that they could just, like, live in an urban setting. Because if they have to shift, that would be a little awkward.
Well, she's moved where things are set. So elephants are mainly in Africa and India, right? So she started setting books in Africa or India. She could have some elephant changelings. She mentions deer changelings in... Were they in fawns?
There were some kind of bird, right?
Yeah, I think that was an owl or swan.
Owls, I think they were.
They're predatory, though.
Yeah, they are.
But they're not, like, predatory and as powerful as, say, a leopard.
An eagle or something.
Yeah, because...
like, as far as birds, yeah.
Because rats are predatory changelings as well, but they're not strong. Because the changeling world is set up like the animal kingdom over, like, well, a leopard could eat a rat, therefore a leopard is going to be the stronger pack.
Right.
Unless there's, like, 100 rats and, like, 2 leopards.
Which makes sense, but, though.
Yeah. A hyena pack.
You know what? I was just thinking hyenas. She hasn't done hyenas. I mean, obviously, pretty common in Shift.
She has, but they remember they were the bad guys in Judd's book because they came, they were under the control of the
Sky. Oh, yes. But a romance with a hyena would be interesting. Because there's other series that have done that. And the hyenas are always
the bad guys.
Interesting.
So Shelley Laurenston has got hyenas in hers, but they're all
those are the bad guys
in it.
Yeah,
and they're freaky. I mean, oh my gosh, here we go again. So Elona
facts about hyenas.
No,
Gunmetal
Magic by Elona Andrews. The heroine in that is a hyena. Shifter.
How come I don't remember that?
It's Andrea. Do you know?
I read that book.
And Raphael, her.
I like Raphael.
Yeah, he's a. Oh my gosh, what are we saying? Oh my god, what are they called? Hyena. Jesus Christ. Yeah, he's a hyena. And then one of my favorite characters, which is Aunt B. She's hyena and she's a badass.
Yes. Yeah,
I love her. Yeah, no, take this spoilers. But yes, yeah, that did make a little tear come to my eye. So they're
just you know.
So they're not the bad guys. They're quite powerful in their own way in that series.
Right.
I can't. They're the only hyenas I can think of in the Shifter world. We've had books, but okay, yeah. So you should probably talk about Mind to Possess at some point, right?
We've done a lot of Animal Kingdom facts.
Yeah, we've done the wildlife portion of the episode. Now let's talk about the book. So, Mind to Possess. So we have Clay, who in previous books has been set up as kind of on the edge of going wild, which basically means he's on the edge of becoming a spree killer and having to be put down by his alpha because of stuff. And we find out what that stuff is kind of in this book, and it's in the form of Talyn, who is a woman or girl rather from his past who shows back up because she needs his help. So I've read this book before and I've read it a few times, and I remember like on the first time I'd read this, I was really looking forward to Clay's book because he was like mysterious and he had a darkness to him because he had that edge because you weren't quite sure if he's going to go off and go all crazy or not. So he really intrigued me, and I remember being excited about finally we get into Clay. And I really enjoyed it. And then the second time I read it, because this is the third time I think I've read this book, I also was excited about it too, because it's like, oh, Clay again. How did you feel can you remember how you felt when you first read it? Because I know this is a reread for you.
So I don't think I was as excited about, ooh, we get Clay. I found him intriguing.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think he was ever like that one character that I was really looking forward to getting his book.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I think that when I first read the series, because this was only my second time reading this book.
Yeah.
When I first read the series, I think that it was one of those moments where I really wanted to get, obviously, Hawk, but I knew that was farther down the line, but I really wanted to get the Kincaid brothers or, like, other people.
Okay.
So he wasn't, like, top of my list, but I found him interesting because of what you just said, you know, he can be dangerous.
Hmm.
Did I feel the same way now? Well, you know, we'll get into that.
Yeah. So, yes. So this, I've kind of hinted at it. So it has a lot of the childhood crush trope. So Clay and Talyn knew each other as children. And they really were children the last time they saw each other. Was she like 8? 9, like she was like
young,
really young. Properly a child, and he was he's a few years older, so he was like 12 or 13. Like, he was really, they were both really young. And so, like, it's not really childhood crush so much as childhood friends, I would say, in this point, because there was no
but crush.
Yeah, but it was a crush in such, like, an innocent, non-sexual way for them at that point.
Yeah, yeah. Totally non-sexual, but, like the connection part was there, because technically, like, the mating connection had happened. I'm sorry, spoilers, Yeah, so I would still call it a childhood crush, just because, like, that deep connection was developed, like, love was developed. So
yeah.
It doesn't have to be sexual, it can just be emotional, so.
Yeah, yeah, so they definitely,
still said crush.
They definitely loved each other. And you got the sense that if, obviously, they'd both grown up, and, like, as soon as they both hit puberty and became teenagers, they would have, they would have coupled up, like, for sure, if. Yeah. Some other things, like, hadn't got in the way. So are you normally a fan of, like, the childhood crush or like childhood friends, and then they become more when they're older, after, like, normally after like a period of absence, isn't it? And then they find each other again.
I mean, I think probably I like the childhood friends more than childhood crush, although I do like both. I don't think either one of those tropes is my favorite trope to read, but I don't dislike them. But it also depends, like, how that separation
happened.
And strangely enough, I found that the separation was kind of, like, not necessarily the separation. I got the separation part. I understood that part. It made sense, obviously. But her feelings towards what happened, I thought were a little much.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's really,
like, I'm trying not to completely spoil
it. I'm gonna completely spoil it.
Okay.
But just because it's hard, I find it hard. Like, I don't want to judge her reaction, because she was being sexually abused by her adoptive father, who was also a serial killer who has a history of killing, like, children. Obviously, she didn't know that at the point. And she was 8, and it was time to make her his bride, which means he was about to kill her when Clay came in and eviscerated
killed him.
Yeah. So she had just gone...
Problem solved.
I know, but she was 8 with a history of sexual abuse.
Yeah.
And then she had witnessed, even though it was to save her, she was 8 and she had just witnessed this
horrific
murder. And gory murder. And, like, she just shuts down. And I'm like, I understand that. I could understand why maybe she doesn't want to see Clay, because in her mind it's associated with all this horrible sexual trauma she has had to endure from, like, a really early age. So even though it's frustrating at times, it's like I'm trying really hard not to judge her for it, because I can't say how, if that had happened to me. Like, how I
definitely
would react.
The trauma was there,
and it's like, it felt like, when I was reading it, I was like, it's so unfair to, like, project this onto Clay, who was only ever wanted to defend you. And it's just, but at the same time, I'm like, well, she was 8.
Well, the way that, like, I kept, well, child. Yeah, she was a child, but, like, the way that I kept seeing it is, if we're to believe this deep connection that they had, which was that basically they loved each other so much and they had basically made it as children, then him protecting her, like, I'm not saying she should have just been completely okay and not had some time to heal from it, but all these years later, how did she not, like, process that? Because it's not like they get they're back together now or in each other's lives.
Yeah.
2 years later, you know, like, we're talking now, so much time has passed. So if that connection was there, if that bond really was there, then she should have been able to process that in that time.
Yeah. I mean, I felt the same way. I just wanted to... It's
like, not... at eight, I get it. But at, now...
at 28. Oh, I actually can't remember how old she is.
Yeah, I don't remember her age
it's
either.
It's about, like, mid to late 20s, I think.
Yeah.
Because I kind of felt that same frustration, but then felt really uncomfortable for judging her in that way, even though I'm just like... not get over it, but like...
Right, no, it's not get over it. It's a horrific thing that happened to her.
Not get over it, but like... get on with Clay. Like, you just, like, I can understand that.
Well, I feel like it's not even like get on with Clay. It's like get on, like, for yourself. Because you got to process that trauma at some point.
Yeah.
And the thing that got to me was, if she hasn't, then how can that relationship be healthy and good?
Yeah.
In the long run, you know? Because, like, if you have all those issues, like, they're not going to, like, snap in five seconds after getting back together.
No. Which leads me to quite a good segue to some of this. So I kind of wish I hadn't reread this, because I had really good memories of this book. But on reading it now, I felt that some of this was really problematic. And I don't know how I managed to skim this over when I'd read it before. But there was, I mean, apart from the sexual trauma that she suffered as a child, which would have fed into some of this. But on top of that, there was a real focus on Talon's, I'm doing air quotes here, like, innocence. And her sexual past, like, as an adult in this book, in a way that for me had a certain air of slut shaming.
Definitely.
And I kind of get some of it. So there's a difference between, like, I like sex and I want to go out and sleep with people because I like it and it's my choice. That wasn't what she was doing. She was going out and having sex with people to punish herself because she doesn't like sex because of what had happened to her, which I was really sad. And it was just a way of self-abuse. If she had been cutting herself or drinking or taking drugs, it equates to the same thing. She was trying to punish herself. She doesn't enjoy sex. She doesn't want people to touch her. And that was horrible. And I thought it was a trauma. And it would have been interesting if she had done that and dealt with it differently than the way that she had, which was Clay losing his mind, the fact that she wasn't a virgin, basically. And I felt so uncomfortable with his reaction, and then her, like, complete shame over these things that she had done. So yeah, I think it was interesting that she'd given Talon kind of that background of sleeping with those men as a way to punish herself. And I just wish that Clay's reaction hadn't been, I wish it had been that reaction for the right reason, rather than, oh my gosh, I can't believe you slept with so many men, but more like, oh my gosh, why did you do that to yourself? Because I know you didn't do it because you wanted to have sex, you did it because you wanted to hurt yourself. Like, I wish there was more nuance in his reaction. And maybe, I don't know how, rather than it, see, I don't know if how you interpreted it, but I interpreted Clay's reaction as, I can't believe she had sex with somebody who wasn't me, even though I haven't seen her in 20 years. And I also didn't like the way that his magical penis somehow managed to rid her of all these sexual issues that she clearly still had, and she didn't particularly work through them, but she had sex with him okay. I mean, they did, like, oh, you can go on top and my magical penis will heal you from below or whatever, but
it's a magical,
I don't know, I just, the sex issue in this book just made me really uncomfortable. I know I've kind of spoken at length now without you without your input, Francesca, and kind of, like, because I was having some real feelings about this as I was reading the book, but kind of, did it come across like that to you? Am I just overthinking it, or is it problematic, or I don't know, tell me, when you read it, what did you think? Did you think that the first time you read it either, or was it just on the reread?
Only on the reread, and I had all those same feelings. And it's funny because, okay, so this was never like my absolute favorite book. Like, I don't remember being my absolute favorite book, but I remember liking it, and I never noticed anything wrong. And definitely every single one of the issues you just mentioned, I disliked Clay's reaction because I felt exactly what you felt. Like, it was about, ooh, well, you were mine because we were basically made it, even if we weren't together. So I didn't like that. And I thought it was just really unhealthy how obviously she had this trauma and that's how she was punishing herself. And again, going back to the point, if you're going to be in a healthy relationship, either your character has worked through some of her trauma or has started to, or you have to show that in the book. And it cannot be a magical penis, I'm sorry, because that's not believable. So those issues were definitely there. Like, that cannot just go away because she's now with the love of her life. You know, supernatural powers aside, mating bond aside, but there's got to be some working through that. And I don't think that that was done enough.
Yeah. There wasn't enough healing, I don't think.
No, I don't think there was enough healing. As a concept, I think that it was interesting, but it needed to go a different way for me to buy into the fact that she's okay.
I agree. I just, maybe being in a loving relationship with Clay would have like helped ease her, but it wouldn't have just...
Over time then. So it as like a magical, perfect, now everything's fine with sex situation. Yeah. And just leave it as an open-ended thing that it's something that they're working through and they're finding ways that she's healing from it. And eventually she'll get there, but she's not there yet. And I think that I would have been satisfied with that as a end point in this book, because I don't think that her character was there.
No, I don't either. And it just...
And then on top of that trauma, then he's shaming her for it.
Yeah.
Which I did not like. So,
it was just, I was not perhaps handled as sensitively as I would have maybe come to expect from Nalini Singh. But this book was written, I mean, it's no real excuse, but it's not uncommon, I guess, in books from this era to have that kind of archaic male thought process, I don't think.
Which I get, because also you're talking predatory changelings. So some of those animalistic tendencies, like, I get, it's not a contemporary. So like, I probably can not give it as much importance in this type of setting because the animal instinct is there. So I get that. But yeah, I still didn't.
But also, she's done really well because the cats are sexually progressive. Right from the start, there's this series, they talk about the young cats, male and female, kind of having that sexual freedom, and the fact that they have partners before is never... They don't prize virginity in their males or their females at all in any other point of this series so far.
Then again, Clay was like the odd one in this whole situation, just because he also was not brought up in a loving shifter family like the rest of the cubs. So I guess I could also see that, like, maybe that's what she was trying to get at, is the fact that him being in that environment and how he grew up in his childhood also left a mark on him, so he's not the same as the rest of the pack. So I guess that also makes sense a little bit.
That's true, but he's been in that pack for over a decade. He has a hand in not raising the youth, but he's part of their program, someone they look up to. And if he's secretly thinking or has this weird belief that I feel like the past decade of his life and the real progressive way that the changelings in his pack view sex didn't seem to make a dent at all when it came to Tally. And I just really hated his reactions. And I felt like he was really reacting to the wrong thing. If she'd come to him and said, I was a heroin addict for however many years, but I now no longer take heroin, like, he would react differently. He wouldn't have had that really deep anger.
And it was basically the same reason.
Yeah, she was doing it to hurt herself in the same way. I feel like if she started to take drugs, it would have been for the same reason.
Yeah.
Ugh. Like, why is being a heroin addict, for example, like just picking a random thing, like better than her having sex. It's still dangerous, like the way that she, the way she was doing it. And I just, and it really made me dislike, Clay, in this book, and I found it really difficult after that, because Talon was clearly a screwed up young woman who hadn't, who'd worked through some stuff, but there's a lot of
there's a lot of it she was still carrying.
Yeah, she was still like hiding from it and not wanting to deal. So. Yes, this that really kind of soured my...
And he wasn't really, like, the hero that helped her heal from that. Like, you know how there's definitely those characters where they're broken. And that HEA, really, you can tell that that's going to be the perfect complement that's going to help them come out of that. And I don't necessarily feel like he was that. In this book.
No, because at one point she was like, I need Clay to forgive me for having sex or whatever, however it was phrased. And I'm like, no, he doesn't need to give you forgive you for fuck all. Like, you don't owe him anything. Like, I'm like, no, I do not like this. Clay needs to get over it himself, and it has absolutely nothing to do with you. Like, he has his own issues if he's got a problem with it, and he doesn't need to forgive you for anything.
And obviously he did have his own issues, and I don't think that those were... They didn't dig into those enough, you know?
Yeah.
It's like... It was just there. Like, you know all this terrible backstory, and you know that he is, like, that dangerous kind of guy that they don't know when he's going to go over and be a killer. And all of that is just, like, not really delved into.
Yeah, I mean, his trauma as a child was nothing compared to her.
No.
Basically, his mum didn't like the fact that he shifted because it reminded her of her mate who had died, is what... And that was, I mean, that was it. I mean, it, obviously, it was hard for him because you're basically denying a part of yourself. But it, he wasn't being sexually abused and murdered by his mum. So, like, my sympathy for Clay by the end just wasn't, I had none. Like, I'm like, nope. Nope, you have acted in a way I really dislike in this book. So, I mean, so that means in terms of the romance for me, it didn't, I was glad, I mean, I was glad they were happy at the end, you know, I guess. But it, the, I mean, fundamentally, the romance just really put me out of joint. I mean, I don't know how you felt about the romance by the end of the book.
Pretty much the same as far as the romance. I definitely remember liking them as a couple more than I did in this book. And I feel like the rest of the plot was what still kept some of my enjoyment for the book. But that's, not necessarily them as the stars.
No. Same. So, I mean, let's move on from this because I feel like we could talk about this a lot, but we'd just be covering kind of the same. Like, it's almost disbelief at this point that some of those things were in this book, I think, because I was so surprised. And I was so surprised I hadn't noticed before as well. So, new characters and concepts were introduced in this, like the Forgotten Network. And then we had Devraj, Max and Ashaya, who were new characters introduced. So the Forgotten Network is almost exactly like it sounds. It's like an alternative Cynet where the people way back in the 70s who did not want to stay and do silence kind of dropped out and formed their own net. And over the years, it's kind of morphed where they've kind of interbred with humans and changelings, and it's become like this hidden network, and we will learn more about that in future books, but it was kind of the concept of it was introduced in this book. So was there anything that really intrigued you, like anyone you wanted to know more about? So for me, it was Max and Dev, who I'm like, oh, they're sexy. I want to know more about them, like, and then Max is human and Dev is seemingly human as well. So yeah, those were the two things, and I wanted to really get into the Forgotten Network as well, and about how it worked and like how it was different to the Psy Network and stuff. So what did you think?
So for me, it was definitely Dev. Like, he was the standout new character, although I liked Ashaya as well. I found her interesting, and like, I wanted to know how she fits in. And definitely the Forgotten Network, I found that whole concept interesting, and I really liked how she opened up more of the world with that in a way that gives you backstory, history of the Psy, different aspects of the Psy. So I really like that. Yeah, but definitely as far as side characters, Dev for the new ones.
Yeah.
And, you know, I have to plug Caleb because...
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
I just had to.
I can't remember now because I read this like a few weeks ago. Was Caleb in this a lot or not? I don't really have memory of much of him being in it very
not
much.
Not a lot. No, not a lot.
Because there
was... Just like a little cameo.
Yeah. Because there wasn't so much focus on the Psy Council and this...
Right.
Oh, there was, but it was like
just
Ming.
With the... Right. Ming, there was like all that other aspect. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Of all this implant, Protocol One, wasn't it? That
right.
It was kind of...
They're trying to stop, yeah.
Yeah, it was in this one, which is really interesting. And yeah, honestly,
yeah, yeah. I liked all those aspects. Like, I think that's the part that kept this book interesting for me.
Yeah.
Is the plot.
Yeah.
Without the romance.
Yeah, for sure. For sure, without the romance. Because John and Noor as well are new characters in this universe, but they're children. So Noor is like six, like she's really young. And then... John is like a teenager, and I really want her to do like Psy Changeling the Next Generation.
Yeah. And oh my god.
And include people like Marley, who is Walker's daughter. They're in the Snow Dancer pack, and also like Noor and John and another few, and Kit as well, the future alpha. Like, I want her to do like the Next Generation book.
Yeah, that's gonna be fun. Hopefully she does that eventually.
Yeah, that would be great. I would love that. I think that would be really cute. So yeah, I really like those parts of the book. I could have done with more of them. And is it I was saying Ashaya. Is it Ashaya?
I have no idea. I say Ashaya, but yeah. I could be totally wrong.
I was going to say, you listen to the audiobooks, and I feel like it would be something that...
Well, I mean, you can't... Half the time, you can't really go by that, though.
Oh, okay, that's fine. I'm going to continue saying Ashaya.
Because I feel like a lot of times, the narrators don't necessarily get input from the author on how they need to pronounce the names. Like, I've listened to audiobooks before where... They're not pronouncing the name the way the author.
Oh, okay. That's interesting.
Would want it, so.
Yeah. Oh, wow. As long as you know who they're talking about when they say it, that's it. It's all good. So, I mean, it also goes a little bit into, so Ashaya, the reason that she doesn't agree with, she's a Psy, and she's very Psy in this book.
Yes.
She's completely under silence, we are led to believe. It was interesting that the only reason that she'll continue doing Protocol One is because basically they're holding her child hostage. And I like the way that it showed how Psy think about their children. Because the reason that she stayed wasn't because she loved her son and he didn't want it taken away, but it was more other things about like dynasty and stuff like that kept her there. Or at least that is how it's written.
How it's portrayed in this book,
yeah. I mean, obviously you learn more because the next book in this series is Dorian and Ashaya. So take from that what you will. But I feel like whether it's true or not for Ashaya, that is in general how your Psy think of their children at this point in time. So I liked that as well. It was like some insight into Psy life. And Psy history, like you said, with the Forgotten Network. She's just so good at building up this world, I think.
Yeah,
I think all the
so
things
too.
That she slips in, and by the end of four books, you've now got so much detail about the world, and you perhaps don't realize how much has been like slipped in through other ways, so it doesn't feel like you're overloaded. At least it didn't feel like that way to me.
Yeah, it didn't feel like overload to me. But and I think that it's good because every book she's given you a different side of the story. So it's kept it interesting and it's kept it fresh and new. But it's at the same time giving you quite a large, like a broad view of the world, which I find really interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of things to pick at with Silence.
Yeah, there's so many different like ways to look at it. I mean, it's definitely different than if you pick up the kind of one and done shifter romances where you don't really need to know much apart from the fact that shifters exist and that's it.
And like what's the pack structure and political structure and whatever.
And it and not quite often it doesn't really go into any interest in politics, but it will just be like, they're shifters, they live in a pack, they're secret. They find a human who they realise is a like, that's it. And that's and that's fine. I've enjoyed books like that. Like, there's nothing wrong with them. But this is a different kind of paranormal romance, I think.
Yeah.
So there's definitely
for sure
more to process in this than perhaps other shifter romances you can get. But it doesn't feel overloaded.
I agree. I agree with that.
Which is why these books and this series have really stuck in my mind, because of the richness of the world, where those kind of one and done shifter romances, I mean, I would struggle to name characters in them.
I forget those. Like, it depends on my mood, whether I love those books or they're just like my palate cleanser books.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a nice thing to say, but I mean, they're good because you need that, you know?
Yeah.
Sometimes you just need something quick and fun and sexy that it doesn't really require you to know a lot of information, but for me, definitely the ones that stand out and that are my favorites that I will always read and recommend are ones that are really rich in world building. And I think Nalini does it probably better than probably better than anyone, just because of the concept of this series in particular. Because even somebody like J.R. Ward with the Black Dagger Brotherhood, as detailed as she gets with her world building and the past and all of that, I still think this is a more fleshed out world.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like with this world, I know how it works and I know quite a lot of the history. With J.R. Ward's world, I don't think it moves together as quite as well. It's not quite as joined up, perhaps, as Nalini Singh's. And I think that's because Nalini Singh had one plot which overarches it a lot. So she had to think about the mechanics of it. Whereas
she had to make it work from like probably like step back and like, let's think of this as a whole.
Yeah. So from book one to 10, I feel like she had it fleshed out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, it all feels fleshed out now as well, but I feel like when she started, she knew what was going to happen in book 10 from book one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think I know the answer to this. How is this book stacked up in comparison to the other books in the series thus far? I mean, this is the worst book for me in the series so far. And it actually, reading this now, when before I loved it, and now I'm like, worst book. Probably my worst Nalini Singh book in general, actually, not just in this series. How will I feel about the books that previously I thought that I didn't like? And not
you're going to like those.
And I feel like it will, perhaps, it's not going to be that I like them less. I think it's going to be that I perhaps like them more. I mean, that's the hope anyway.
Right.
So it got me thinking, actually, perhaps books that I didn't like, maybe I'm going to like more because of this book, which I have as one of, not my favourite in the series, but like maybe in the top five-ish. I actually like one of the worst books by Nalini Singh's ever written. How about you? Like, I mean, I think I know what you're going to say, but yeah.
It definitely doesn't stack up to my memory. But again, and it's weird. I mean, we'll get into the rating after, but I was surprised to see what I rated it just because my memory of this book is not a standout book in the series for me, from what I remember. Like, they were just okay for me from memory. So I guess that's probably one of the reasons I'm not as devastated.
Yeah.
in the sense that it did not stack up to my memory. But if I separate like the two things, I really did like the plot in this book versus, for example, like the plot in Faith and Vaughn's book. I think this was a much stronger world building wise and like, you know, everything that you're learning. I think this was a stronger story, in my opinion. But everything else really dragged it down.
Which, yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah. So definitely no, it did not stack up to memory.
I mean, I would agree.
Disappointing. Was disappointing.
Yeah. A plot in this was really, really good. And I did prefer it to. I preferred it to Faith's plot. The plot in that was a bit wishy-washy.
Mm-hmm.
But perhaps not to Judd's and perhaps
not to Judd's. I would say definitely not to Judd's. And
even to Sasha's, to be honest, because that was what started it all off.
Yeah. You know, the plot with Sasha's, though, like it was like loose, kind of like it's not wishy-washy, but it wasn't an intense kind of plot.
No.
And it was slow to build and give you like the information that you needed. But definitely this is one of the stronger ones, I think, so far.
Yeah.
But yeah, Judd is the best. At the moment.
Yeah, yeah. For me, it goes Judd's book. I mean, talking overall, like putting everything together, it would be Judd's book, Sasha's book, Faith's book, this book.
Right. If we're judging everything all together, I would have the same order.
Yeah. Yeah.
So far.
Oh, yeah, so far. I don't think this book's going to move from the bottom spot, if I'm honest. Just because of no matter how good the plot was, I just can't. The slut shaming and stuff in this is just something I just hate so much.
Yeah.
Made me feel really uncomfortable. And I don't often actively hate heroes in certain types of books. But this, like, I would never categorise this Nalini Singh as somebody who writes problematic heroes in this way. No. And, like, I wasn't expecting. But, okay. So, I mean, any favourite moments in this book?
When the cubs came, when Sasha was talking to, what's her name? Talon. And that was sweet because it showed a moment where Sasha is now fully a part of the pack.
Yeah.
Like the interactions of seeing Sasha as part of the pack now, I really like that.
Yeah, that's cute. I forget how often Sasha is in this.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the series.
Well, you know, to be honest, I did like the first time that Clay brings Talon to his lair.
He does call it a lair, so. Yeah.
I like that.
I'm gonna start calling my house a lair.
Yeah.
See what happens. So favorite moments for me, I did like the bits with Jonathan and Noor in the facility and the bits of Ashaya. Because I thought they were interesting. And I'm also, I think I'm just projecting a bit. So because there's either a Slices of Life or a novella with Jonathan and Noor like featuring heavily in it. And it's adorable. And so whenever they're in a scene, I'm like, oh, Jonathan and Noor, they're so cute. And like he protected Noor. And I just, yeah, yeah. I really liked seeing them. I really like that. Brought back good memories, if nothing else. So now the rating starts. So originally I rated this as 5 stars. That is changing. And I think it might be down to 2. I had some real issues with this book. Really, real big issues. And it's a romance book at the end of the day, not an urban fantasy. And the romance in it, the central like point of the book, no. just no. And if the plot wasn't so strong, it would be a one star. So it's getting demoted to 2 stars for me. Really, really is. Because I was saying in our Visions of Heat episode that Visions of Heat for me, I'm keeping it at 5 stars because it deserves it in some ways. But in reality, if you look at the book more objectively, I think it's more of a 3.5. Mm-hmm. So I can't rate this book as a 3 because there's not enough difference. So right. it needs to be a 2. It needs to be a 2 for me.
That's probably true. Like if I'm being really rational about it, I probably would feel the same. I also rated this 5 stars, which I was surprised to see when I looked at my rating, just because I don't remember loving this book that much to rate it 5 stars. But, you know, I binge read these, so I probably was just so excited about reading the series and, like, getting to know more in the world. So that's probably what happened with the 5 star. I mean, granted, there's a ton of books that I've rated 5 stars in the past that I know for a fact I would not like right now. This is also why I don't reread them and why I don't reread that often. So I definitely will not be keeping this at 5 stars because, honestly, from memory, I don't know how it was. I thought I had given this 4, to be honest.
Okay, yeah.
Like, my original memory was that I gave this 4 stars. So,
now, what are you giving it?
I mean, I'm giving it 3.
Okay.
If I'm being rational, like, the way you just explained it, I think you're right. I think it would need to be less than 3, because I agree with you that I kept also Visions of Heat, I think, at 5 or 4 or whatever I kept it at. And it deserved to be, like, a 3.5. Book. So yeah, technically there wouldn't be enough difference. I just can't do it. So I'm gonna keep it at a 3.
Yeah. No, I'm gonna downgrade it on Goodreads to 2. I've written a review for this book as well, like gushing about it. And I'm like, do I delete that? Do I just do an update?
Do an update review after 2021 reread.
Yeah. Ugh. I don't understand how I... Yeah, no, this was definitely not my favourite. It has its good points because it's Nalini thing and there are always good points in her books, but
yeah,
very disappointed by the romance in this. Yeah. But I am looking forward to reading the next book in the series, which is Hostage to Pleasure, which is Dorian's book. So I don't know... So Dorian... excited to read his book? When you realized on your first read that it was Dorian, were you excited about it?
I was excited on my first read to read Dorian's book.
Yeah.
Am I as excited now?
Are you just reading books to get to Hawks? Is this what this is? Or Caleb's, rather.
Well, actually, I was excited to read Dorian's book because I really like Dorian's character when... you know, first time reading it. I had really liked his character. Yeah. So I was really looking forward to reading his book. I wonder, now I have to check my original ratings because I feel like my memory is one thing and then what got onto Goodreads is... It's spoiler alert, it's 5 stars. So... I feel like I rated everything at 5 stars. In this series, but again, because I was binging the series and I was really into the development of the world, like as we were going through it, and if you're, I feel like binging this series is probably the best way to do it because you're really absorbing all of that information at the same time instead of having like time between them.
Yeah. I binged it as well.
I didn't rate everything 5 stars, but yeah, there's a lot of 5 stars here. Okay, so yeah, from memory, it's kind of like how I remembered this book that we just looked at.
Yeah.
Like Mind to Possess and Hostage to Pleasure were kind of like even for me from memory.
Oh gosh, I hope that I hope that doesn't ring true.
Well, I don't think that the problems that you had with this one are going to be problems that
you're
facing the other one. So,
do you know what I remember most about this book is that about Hostage to Pleasure is that he makes her come without really touching her. Do you remember that scene?
No.
He barely touches her. But I mean, it's a really hot scene.
And now I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah.
So there we go.
But yeah, that's really good. I mean, spoilers, guys. you know it's Dorian and Ashea just by reading the blurb, so I don't feel like it's too much of a spoiler. Yeah, moving swiftly on from spoiling the entire book. So thank you for listening. So next week we won't be talking about Hostage to Pleasure, but we will be going back to our Zodiac recommendations and talking about our favourite Aries characters. And hopefully we won't do a complete character assassination for Aries like we did for Pisces. But you mean...
So sorry, guys.
Yeah, I mean... So sorry about that. But we did.
Well, I mean, first of all, you did that for Aquarius also. I did not get offended. So, you know, because supposedly Aquarius ended up being kinky people with past trauma. So, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all bullshit anyway. So it's fine.
oh, Suzanne.
I know. I had to get that in there. But we're going to do it. The character traits are still well documented and we're going to look them up and find our Aries characters, which should be fun. I already have a list and I can't wait to share it with you. See if you agree or disagree. but thank you for listening to us. I hope you enjoyed the wildlife facts that I gave you, the cat facts, the most.
Tune in for more information next week.
When we get to a wolf book, don't you worry, there will be some wolf facts coming at you.
Oh my god.
So you can enjoy that too. Something else to look forward to.
Something to look forward to, of course.
Yep. But anyway, thank you for joining us. Don't forget to subscribe to the podcast, and we would really appreciate it if you could take a few seconds to rate us 5 stars. If you want to find us, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook, and then also we have the website, which is thefangover.com, so go and check that out. And if you want to find me in the world, which of course you do, I'm on Instagram at Tales of Suzanne and underthecoversbookblog.com.
And you can find me on Instagram at UTCBookBlog and underthecoversbookblog.com.
Thanks very much for listening, guys, and we will see you in the next episode. Bye!
Bye!